AARP Indiana, an information resource for Hoosiers about the CARE Act, providing support for caregivers when their loved one enters and leaves the hospital. More at action.aarp.org/incarecard.
Mike Pence names the next lieutenant governor. What's behind the Eric Holcomb pick? Democrats challenge Todd Young's ballot status, the new landscape in the Senate race, and big layoffs in the manufacturing sector. That plus the Ed Whitcomb tribute and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 12, 2016.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Mike Pence named Eric Holcomb to be the next lieutenant governor. It's a move designed to help Pence recapture the Republican base. Holcomb is a former aide to Mitch Daniels and a former state GOP chairman who has spent the last decade working with Republicans from around the state. He has never held elected office. However, he will replace Sue Ellspermann as lieutenant governor. She's stepping down in hopes of becoming the next president of Ivy Tech. Here's Ellspermann, followed by Pence.
I will be at the appropriate time in an orderly way resigning my role as the 50th Lieutenant Governor.
Eric Holcomb has the character and the experience to serve our state as Lieutenant Governor.
The Lieutenant Governor's area of responsibility aligns perfectly with my interests.
I'm shocked you'd ask about
And that's Holcomb. What's the political calculus behind his selection? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, Leslie Weidenbender, managing editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is a Pence-Holcomb ticket stronger than a Pence-Ellspermann ticket?
I don't think so. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Mike Pence forced Sue Ellspermann out. I mean, by every account, she's been a good lieutenant governor. Obviously would be next in line to run for governor, but the Republicans aren't interested in nominating a woman for governor. So that instead they bring in the attack dog, which is what the role that Eric Holcomb has adopted all through his political career. And
it is the role he played for Mike Pence four years ago as state GOP chairman.
He is ideologically Mike Pence. I mean, he's in favor of discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender. He even attacked, when he was running for state representative, he even attacked someone for voting for the budget, calling them being in favor of bestiality because the Kinsey Institute is at IU. So he will say or do anything. He's opposed when he goes to contributors for solicitation for money. He says that Mike Pence has mishandled RFRA. When he's standing next to Mike Pence, they're together. He will say or do anything.
Well, what he did say when he was standing next to Mike Pence was that his agenda is our agenda.
There you go.
Well, let me ask a question here. Mm-hmm. Ann, are you a lawyer? Are you a lawyer?
Yes, John,
am.
And you are, too.
As am I. And facts matter to lawyers, typically.
Sure.
Yes.
Which is why I just recited them.
Right. And so one of the facts that you missed is the fact that Sue Ellspermann made this decision to pursue a different career path.
I see.
A very serious, tough decision for her to make.
Okay.
And so when that happens, and the team decides they've got to find a replacement, they had to obviously take a look.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
That's where we end up with.
Does Mike Pence control the process?
By the governor, very
does Mike Pence, through his appointments, control the process for appointing the president of Ivy Tech?
Let me talk to you about this real quickly, because you've got.
He appointed
the trustees.
Right. Sue
Ellspermann is a tremendous person, which is what you're trying to say. You thought it was a stronger ticket with Ellspermann and
Pence
together.
I do, because I think Mike Pence has
trouble with women. She is a tremendous person. And she's pursuing this Ivy Tech career path because I think for her it really spoke to her heart, and she really wanted to do that. So,
okay, well, why don't you
so
wait till it happens before you resign?
Well, with that being said,
she
can't, because that Ivy Tech board has the responsibility to pursue a search, and they are doing that. And they may not have a decision until the summer, so she is at at risk.
So you wait till the
summer.
She's
somewhat at risk, but she's made that decision for her career. So Eric Holcomb is the choice, and I tell you what, he is somebody who knows the state well.
Yeah.
He's very experienced. He's served
sure
in the administration.
He is. He's a great attack dog, yeah. but that doesn't answer the question.
Tim, let's talk about the politics here.
Yes.
Normally, a lieutenant governor really, no matter how much we talk about it, plays almost no role in whether or not somebody gets elected. They do some campaigning. The key is just not to hurt the candidate for governor. So normally this would not be a big deal. I don't think it matters whether it's Eric Holcomb on the ticket or Sue Ellspermann. What matters, though, is that it's somebody different. We don't know whether Sue Ellspermann decided to get out or whether Mike Pence told her to get out.
We actually do know that.
You know what's out for
talk to Sue Ellspermann. I mean, let's not make up facts. Well, I mean, that's how this got started.
I don't feel like I know for sure what happened.
Yeah, well, I think
or
I do.
Why, or why maybe even if she did decide to get out, I don't know exactly why she did. But regardless, it doesn't matter exactly why. It matters how it gets played in the election, and it's not going to get played in a way that helps Mike Pence.
Well, what's interesting to me, John Ketzenberger, is polls have shown that Mike Pence has weakness with college-educated women. It would seem to make sense for him to have a woman on a ticket. The last three lieutenant governors have been women, and now he chooses a white male. That seems out of the ordinary.
Well, it seems to run contrary to what the polling would suggest, and I agree with that. I think dealing with the facts and the political facts and the way they're perceived here, it is a difficult time for candidate Mike Pence to have his lieutenant governor decide, for whatever, whether she decided on her own and was not had told she needed to resign. It's an awkward time. That makes this whole process very difficult and tumultuous. The other thing is you go from somebody who is universally seen as very capable, has been a credit to the office, who has much talent and wide appeal, and you're replacing that person with a man who has a lot of talent and a lot of contacts and can bring a lot to the ticket, but does not attract what you would think is necessary, and that is a lot of the women in the political in the Republican Party who might be looking at this and thinking, why?
Or
why
even
are
these independent
changes?
Women.
Or even independent women. And the other interesting thing about this is this now makes an auditor, a treasurer, a secretary of state, and lieutenant governor on the Republican ticket who have failed to serve out their term. So when you vote for a person on the statewide ticket in the Republican Party, you don't know who you get. You don't know who you get. He has been the attack dog, and it's going to be interesting to see how much of his time he spends as lieutenant governor and how much he spends on the campaign trail at public expense.
He will do that job very well. He's been a very capable public servant. He's proven that time and again. He's worked for the United States Senate. He's traveled the state. He's going to be an excellent lieutenant governor and a great candidate and also a great teammate for Pence.
And he's supposed to bolster.
And he was the best choice for Pence out of all the
his best choice was to keep Sue Ellspermann.
So time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: is Eric Holcomb a good choice for lieutenant governor? Your choices are A, yes; B, no; or C, I liked it better when he appeared on Indiana Week in Review. Last week's question: did the state Senate take the easy way out by avoiding a civil rights vote? 84% said yes, 6% said no, 10% said it really doesn't matter. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. In order to make the ballot, a candidate for U.S. Senate must gather 500 petition signatures in each of Indiana's 9 congressional districts. Todd Young collected just 498 in the 1st congressional district, according to Democrats who filed a challenge with the State Election Commission. The Todd Young campaign believes that it has 501 certified signatures in that district based on actions taken by county clerks. The Election Commission will decide which side is right at a hearing next week. Meantime, Republican leaders in the General Assembly are defending the ballot requirement. Here's House Speaker Brian Bosma.
I don't think it's too high a hurdle, but you need to be sure that you beat the hurdle. So I was a little surprised when I heard that there were only 501 certified signatures originally. That's cutting it way too close for most candidates, I would say.
If it's true, it's one of the most colossal mistakes I've ever seen. And it's stunning because I suspect that Congressman Young thought he had all the signatures wrapped up weeks ago. So all I can say is I'm amazed that he's in that situation, and I'm going to wait.
And that's Senate President Pro Tem David Long, who, by the way, has endorsed Young's primary opponent, Marlon Stutzman, John Hammond. Will Young stay on the ballot?
You know, I can't tell yet. I don't know. The commission will have to discover all the facts. We talked about fact-finding. We don't have all the information. It'll come out during the hearing. That's going to be February the 19th. I have talked to both camps, both the Young team as well as the Stutzman team. I have to say, I think the folks in Young's camp, they believe that they will have the arguments in place and some facts that others have not seen yet that will make the case for them. So we just don't know yet.
They made a big mistake regardless, going in with just 501 signatures, didn't they?
Well, you know, they actually had 650 they submitted, right?
But they had 501 certified.
They got certified. That's correct.
And they, at that point, they still had time to go get more.
So, but I think the criticism is they walked in with 650, and that's, you know, typically that should be enough. But up in the first district, you never know. That's probably the toughest district outside the 7th to get signatures.
So the Democrats went through, and they say that there are only
as did a number of media sources.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, and the media sources came up with one less than
the Democrats did.
Right. So either way, it's not 500.
It's not 500, and there are more that are suspect as well. So the challenge is there. Marlon Stutzman's joined in the challenge this morning. So there is a validity to this. There's a requirement. Everybody knew what the rules were. If we're going to have ballot integrity, which is what the Republicans talk about all the time, it seems to me you follow the rules. Mike Pence was not reluctant to kick Jim Wallace off the ballot 4 years ago for not having enough signatures.
Well, it was the Election Commission that did it.
It was the Election Commission brought by Mitch Robe on behalf of Mike Pence. So if Mike Pence kicked him off the ballot for being, I think, 7 signatures short. So it seems to me what's sauce for the goose.
Well, this is very entertaining for a number of reasons, but one of them is that the Young campaign had this time. They could have gone out and gotten more signatures.
Well, I think it doesn't reflect well on the campaign and its organization, because they made a big point out of 2 weeks before the deadline saying, we've got this all done, we can go on and take care of other matters in the race right now. And then to find out that, indeed, they may not have gotten it done, and really were cutting it razor thin regardless, I think gives a lot of in for Stutzman, certainly to begin with, and his Democrat opponent after that, if it goes that far.
Okay, so the Election Commission is 2 Democrats and 2 Republicans, and a 2-2 vote would keep him on the ballot.
Yeah, unless that can be court. That can be appealed to court, to a court, which throws the entire system kind of into chaos leading up to the primary.
In my sense, that's true. In my sense is that at least both candidates will respect the process at the commission level. I expect that to happen. I don't know.
Marlon there's no reason for Marlon Stutzman to file a challenge at this point unless he wants to be able to go to court if the Democrats don't.
Exactly.
My advice to everyone in both those camps is to respect that process and have conversations with both. I think they will. But the facts have to be laid out. There are these bipartisan voter registration teams that certify these numbers. And then they're compared against a master list that's an electronic file that's with the Election Division. So when all those facts get straightened out, we'll see.
But the problem, John,
the young folks are very confident they'll be on the ballot.
The problem, John, is that 3 of those signatures are on twice. Okay, they're on twice.
I've not
that's
seen
not
those.
That's not subject to a lot of debate.
Have you
they
seen
signed
those
they signed in 2 different places, John.
Have you seen
it's
those?
It's not a question. Yeah. It's not subjective.
I don't think you and I've had a chance to examine that.
In the meantime, the Young campaign has gone on the offensive. They're accusing the Democrats of using Chicago style
following the rules.
Policies.
Oh my God.
Why do you go on the offensive if you're confident you've done it right?
Because in this case because you have to try to get people to look somewhere else. And you need to get the attention away from the fact that you apparently didn't reach the threshold, or you're in danger after all of this effort and all of this attention of not being on the ballot. And I think it's interesting because A lot of this is blown back on the Democrats. There's been some criticism among some pundits and others for raising the question, and I think that's, you know, you can denigrate or you can give Democrats grief if you don't think they have ideas, but they're just enforcing the rule here.
You've got to be very careful how hard you press on a technicality this time. You haven't gone through...
Mike Pence threw somebody off the ballot on a technicality.
You're going to run really head-on into something where you say, okay, great. This is now over with. We've decided we're going to get rid of this candidate on this sort of legal technicality.
Clearly, the Democrats would rather run against Marlon Stutzman.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Will the public blame the Democrats if Todd Young gets taken off the ballot?
No. I just don't think they will. I don't think
the backlash in a residency challenge. People pursue that. Oh, great, we're going to get Evan
Bayh
off the ballot.
Can we talk about the most ironic thing, which is that Eric Holcomb dropped out of this race a few days before
taking deck chair on the Titanic.
One day before, and then it could because he was basically in third, essentially. And now it turns out he could very well have been competitive.
Yes. This is one grand parlor game that's going to rest on a lot of facts that will be determined
Mike
on February
Pence,
the 19th. So
Mike
just stay
Pence
tuned.
Pence threw Wallace off the ballot 4 years ago. It didn't blow back on him. You follow the rules. You guys are the ones who put the rules in place. Well, you're the ones who talk about ballot integrity until the cows come home.
The Democratic State Committee doesn't have any ideas or devoid of them.
If
Todd Young stays on the ballot, the GOP Senate primary will be a one-on-one encounter between Young and Marlon Stutzman. They reacted this week to Eric Holcomb's departure from the race. Here's Young.
But I'll say he's added a whole lot to this race, talking about solutions and issues. He has a real heart for public service. I know he'll continue to serve our state and our country in some fashion.
It was definitely a surprise. We were in Logansport last night at a Lincoln Day dinner and didn't sense anything last night from that. So, you never know in politics. Things always can come around and surprise you.
And that's Marlon Stutzman, John Ketzenberger. Again, assuming Young stays on the ballot, who benefits most from the Holcomb departure?
From the Holcomb departure, I think that probably helps Eric Young in this situation, because there was some question whether they might split some of the more moderate votes in the Republican Party. That question will be gone. But I don't know that it's a huge difference. I think it's just a slight gain for him in this case.
Marlon Stutzman says he thinks it helps him because he will more clearly be identified as the most conservative in the race.
I think certainly that both candidates get to identify themselves more clearly. I really don't think it has a huge impact, except the race is just easier. It's easier for both sides. They would be going against one person. And I think it's frankly easier for voters to figure out who they best identify with.
And donors.
And I think most of Eric's donors probably find their way to Todd Young. Frankly, I think that's sort of the allegiance that's there. I don't know how much everything else transfers. I think John's right. The conventional wisdom out there is that they shared a certain base. And it's probably accrues to the benefit of Todd Young in general. I think Stutzman is positioned in an interesting way in a very interesting and very strange election year, to where he may be tapped into something that a more established candidate or establishment-oriented candidate may not be tapped into at the moment.
So are you saying Stutzman's the favorite?
No, I'm not saying that at all, but this has been a tough week for me all the way around, by the way. It's a tough situation for all of us in the Republican Party sort of to contend with here, but I don't know who the favorite is. I don't know how much polling's been done, but I do think from a donor standpoint, I think a lot of that heads its way to Todd Young.
Well, as tough as this week has been for the Republicans, it's been pretty good for the Democrats.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. I mean, you don't often get mistakes made the way the Young campaign. The arrogance involved in that is kind of overwhelming. So, I think Stutzman I don't know whether Young stays on the ballot. Certainly, if they follow precedent in the past, he won't. But even if he is on the ballot, if you wind up with the presidential campaign, Republican presidential nomination still in contention in Indiana in May, it's a different ballgame, completely different ballgame. And I'm sure Eric Holcomb is kicking himself. I'm sure he would have been happy to have Mike Pence pick Brian Bosma, for example, who probably would have made more sense.
Moving on. Jobs are the main plank in the Mike Pence platform, and from that perspective, this was a bad week. Starting next year, Carrier, which makes products for the heating and air conditioning industry, says it will move manufacturing operations to Mexico. The transition should be complete in 2019. That means 1,400 workers at an Indianapolis plant will lose their jobs. Leslie Weidenbender, does that rub off on the governor?
Well, I think he's done a remarkably good job of being disassociated with it so far. He has really, I think, only been on camera once or twice even talking about it. He hasn't been out making statements or doing anything. But, yes, I do think in the end Democrats can make a good ad out of this. They can do a lot with this.
Well, and Senator Joe Donnelly has gone to meet with Carrier executives, something that the governor hasn't done, although the Pence administration has said that it will try to claw back some incentives.
Well, I think that that's certainly something that they should do because of the way those things work. If you expect to get the incentives, then you better perform, and if you don't perform, then you should pay it back. But I think that the point is well made, that the governor has been silent on this, while the mayor and Senator Donnelly have both been very involved in this. And John, just a second.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I think I'll that, let you that finish, the, but I got 2 points to make.
Go I've got more than that.
I think it's notable by his absence, because he is always there for the job announcements, and understandably so. And I think the contrast is startling.
And first.
What is amazing about this is we were told if we had right to work, and if we cut the corporate income taxes, all the good-paying jobs would flow in. It's not simply Carrier. It's Alcoa. It's Cummins. It's UTEC. We have lost over 3,000 manufacturing jobs in the last several months here. And instead, what the government, the state government, seems to be focusing on is, if you expand a little bit with your jobs, we'll help you move your operations from Marion County to Hamilton County, which is not how state funds are supposed to be used. It's going to blow back on him big time.
Y'all have written a little bit of a fairy tale. Unemployment is 4.4%.
Yeah. 144,000 jobs.
I let you go all the way through.
Well, actually, you interrupted John.
No, I did not.
Go ahead.
Let him complete.
Go ahead.
So 144,000 new jobs. Mm-hmm. 34,000 less people on unemployment insurance. Mm-hmm. GM, Toyota, Subaru, Isuzu.
Does it rub off on the governor?
The governor has sent a team of people from the IEDC and the Department of Workforce Development to help replace and make sure these people have these jobs.
Yeah. So we've lost 3,200 manufacturing jobs
in three months.
Well, the governor's got talking points, is what you're telling me. But tell me, does it rub off on the governor?
No, I think at the end of the day, when you look at the entire picture of economic development in the state of Indiana, he's done an outstanding job.
Yeah,
I think
we're trading high-paying manufacturing jobs for service industry jobs.
And he has worked very hard, very early, within 24 hours, to help these employees relocate. And there's a lot of relocate.
Oh, good. So we're going to move out?
Relocate?
Mary
no, they're job opportunities.
Well, maybe they can move to Fishers while he moves the other industries.
This is Huntington and also
Leslie.
One of the notable things here is the amount of blaming that's going on between all the different people. So you have you've got the Carrier folks. They're blaming the federal government. They're blaming overregulation. You've got Pence saying that this is an example of what's wrong in Washington. Yet the Pence administration can't point to one thing that happened in Washington that would have affected.
Nor can Carrier, according to Senator Donnelly.
Absolutely. And then you've got, Senator Donnelly talking about the fact that this is all about how little that, they have to pay workers in Mexico. And it's kind of unfortunate to see all these people not coming together as one to try to figure out what might be going on.
You think that's got anything to do with the fact that it's an election year?
Well, it also has to do with the fact that it's not simply the corporate income tax that makes a difference as to whether companies stay or grow here. It's also the infrastructure, the education system, and the amount of
people. There are 100,000 job openings right now in Indiana, and we're trying to find places, people to fill those, and I hope
so you're saying the education system is failing?
No, we hope these employees of the Indianapolis Huntington plants can find those opportunities.
Finally.
They're working on it.
Finally, former Governor Ed Whitcomb was remembered at the State House this week. Whitcomb died last week at the age of 98. He was elected governor in 1968 and served one term after serving in the state legislature and as Indiana Secretary of State. He was a prisoner of war in World War II, and after retiring, sailed solo around the world. Among those paying tribute was Kent Morgan.
He was a POW, escaped twice. He's one of the last of American heroes we have in America. We've been blessed to have him here in the state.
John Hammond, what is Ed Whitcomb's legacy?
You know, who's your hero? Someone who was an old-school gentleman, someone who was an adventurer, someone who was his own person, and was true to himself and true to his Southern Indiana roots.
He ran on a no new taxes pledge long before that was popular, and the Republican Party abandoned him for it.
You got all of that, but you can't take anything from him. I mean, he had a rich and a full life, and he lived it to the utmost. And there aren't many people that can say that.
I think that's right. Ed Whitcomb was a remarkable man, and was remembered today with a remarkable ceremony at the State House that included howitzers on the South Lawn.
You know, it's a good life when the news media has to report not to worry about the big booms you're going to hear, because they're not just a 21-gun salute, but the howitzers, and good for it was well worth it.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, Leslie Weidenbender of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.